ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Susan Nandathar tells us the story behind the story of her debut novel. Jive Cooley joins Carson Bench of KSKQ to introduce their new drummer to Charlie Stanton and the New York Times bestseller Missing You by Harlan Coben in our audiobook feature right after the news you want to know. It's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic. A kind of magic. One dream, one soul, one prize, one goal, one golden glance of what should be. It's a kind of magic. One shaft of light that shows the way. Hello, I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Cyrus Emerson. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world.
Well, we're not going to give a spoiler alert because when the show airs, it'll already have aired. Game of Thrones is starting its fourth season.
And it was just renewed for two more seasons.
Wow.
And it's called The Purple Wedding. And
they're on the cover of the latest Vanity Fair. I've actually never seen an episode, but everyone raves about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to be, it's huge.
Oh no, you should watch it. They're really, 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 really good.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've heard nothing but good stuff about it.
Yeah, acting is great, and it's all medieval, but it's not medieval battles all the time, stuff like that. There's a storyline.
There's a lot of, political intrigue.
And it's all new. This season four is the fourth book that George R.R. Martin just wrote.
Song of Ice and Fire series.
Right. Yeah. So, this is the fourth book, and then he's working on the other books. But I did get a chance to see a sneak preview of it, and I won't tell you how, but I did.
You have your inside sources?
Charlie knows people.
Yeah. Okay, so I was over at George's house for dinner. I thought that meant, he was going to put me on Survivor.
Or he was going to buy your company.
Right, one of the two. No, but anyway, if you like the Tudors, you'll love the Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, and I think what's cool about Game of Thrones is, it comes out once a week, and only for 4 months. Right? That's how long it takes to tell a story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's no commercials.
Nice. HBO. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. This brings me to an article I read recently that 19% of young people between the ages of 19 and 30 don't have any sort of television service. Mm. They watch it's all online. Hulu, Netflix, YouTube, those kind of things. That cable is literally becoming, for these people, and this is a huge demographic for advertisers, is becoming a thing of the past. And for the first time ever, advertising revenue from online surpassed advertising revenue from television.
Oh, that's interesting.
More money was made advertising on the internet than it was on TV for the first time ever. So we see with Game of Thrones, I love the fantasy genre. I love HBO. There is nothing about that series that sounds bad to me, and yet I haven't watched any of it yet. Part of the reason is because of what this technology has allowed us to do. I like to binge watch. Breaking Bad, I watched the first few episodes. I said, this is a great series, so I stopped watching it because I wanted to wait until the whole series finished. Then I'm binge watch.
How many episodes do you watch at once?
Do you have HBO at home?
No, I don't. Not yet.
What, do you have Netflix?
I do.
Okay, then why don't you just watch series one on Netflix?
Here's why. Because I am very much a completionist type personality, so I don't want to watch it until it's done.
You're talking 4 years worth of series.
Yeah, I know. But see, Breaking Bad went on for 5 years, and I watched all of them in a row.
Like, what do you mean? Like, you mean...
like
you just
I
sit
binge
there.
Watch. I just marathon. Sit and I watch 5-6 hours in a row at a night. Just like watch. What? Because I don't want to wait. I don't want to be like you and be a fan and have to wait 6 months for season five to come out. That drives me nuts.
So like you will just make yourself a bowl of popcorn and lie in the. You'll actually
just
sit there for
sit
five
there for
hours
at a time and watch. Yeah, it's called binge watching.
Wow.
I'm not alone. That's what this 19% of people that don't have cable, this is what they do, binge watch.
I thought I binged watched, but it's only an hour at a time.
Like we talked about this last month, I think, House of Cards, you know, a Netflix original series, highly popular. They released the whole season at once. So you can literally sit and watch the entire season's worth in one sitting if
you
really wanted
to. Yeah, they did the same thing with Orange is the New Black.
Orange is the New Black is another one. Yep, exactly. This is the trend.
It's a trend. And I, for one, can't wait, you know, for cable TV to bite the dust.
Me too.
Why?
Why? Because they have terrible services. They way overcharge.
Massively overcharge.
And they, you know, they try to intimidate their customers, and they have the worst customer service in the world.
Yeah, because they know you can't go anywhere else.
Right. Mm-hmm. But all that's changing, you know?
Yep. Yeah. There's real competition for them, finally. It's a flawed structure. Why do I need 150 channels when I watch five of them? Yeah. I want to just get the channels that I want and be done with it. And that's what the internet is doing, is giving us the ability. Especially when, you know, what Varun talked about. If we get Google Fiber here in Oregon and it comes down this way, it'll be even better. Because then the speeds are so fast, you can just... download, you know, and just mm-hmm. download and watch them.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because sites are taking advantage of it. And like Hulu, it costs money. If you want to see most of the shows or a lot of the shows, you have to be paying for their monthly charge.
Right, so, but $8 a month versus $80 for cable,
is that
which
how
is
much
a better
cable
deal.
Costs?
Oh, cable costs anywhere from my dad pays $120 a month, I kid you not.
Oh, wow.
Because he has everything, all the premium channels. And the other advantage of this system is, and Charlie and I talked about this the other day, is so like as it works with Downpour, our, you know, the website for the audiobooks is the ability to move from device to device. So with the cable, you're stuck watching it on whatever TV has the cable box. If I start watching Orange is the New Black on my iPad, I can then go down and watch it on my internet-connected Blu-ray player downstairs. Or I can be in my car and watch it on my phone.
And hopefully you're not in the driver's seat.
Sometimes. but usually not. But the point being is that I'm not tethered to a time and location. You know, in the 80s, you wanted to watch Alf. You had to be home at 8 o'clock on whatever day that was to watch it. And then you were stuck watching the commercials, you know, and now it has freed us up to watch when and how much we want. That's why, like with Game of Thrones, I want to watch it when it's all done.
Okay, well, then you've got a long way to go. But, because it's that popular.
It just seems to
But there is one TV show that I neglected, you know, to mention that I do watch.
Do tell.
I don't watch it, you know, all the time. You know, when I get a chance, I watch it on demand anymore.
Ooh, what is it?
You had my interest. Now you have my curiosity.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Whoever can name it wins $100.
Yeah. Or no, you had my curiosity. Now you have my attention. Yeah. Do tell.
All right. Persons of Interest.
Oh, I love that show. Jim Caviezel. That's a great show.
I don't even know it. What is it?
It's a show. It comes on CBS, and it's about, you know, these group of people that look out for other people all around the world.
Hmm.
You know, that like if you're a target, whether you're a good person or a bad person, and you're in danger, they will find you and protect you.
It's kind of like the A-Team with high technology. What it is, this guy wrote a program that basically using all the data that's available on the internet and everything is able to calculate people who are in danger, you know, like it's some huge algorithm. So they'll just get a number. It's like a social security number, and they'll know that this person is in danger, but they don't know what kind of danger. They don't know who's after them. So they will just show up and kind of insinuate themselves in their person's life in an effort to protect them from whatever it is that's coming their way. It's a fantastic show.
Oh, you got to watch it, you know, because it's fast moving. It's You watch one show and I guarantee you'll go like, dang, that was good.
You'll want to watch the next episode?
Yeah, and it comes on, I don't know if it comes on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, whatever. You know, I kept missing it. And I go,
yeah,
like,
they
dang.
Moved it.
I keep going, dang, I missed the show, right? And then my daughter goes, why don't you just watch it on demand? And I go, yeah, why don't I? You know, yeah,
I remember when it first came out, it was on Thursdays, and then they moved it to Sunday, and now it's on, like, Tuesday.
But you can watch it on demand, and it doesn't cost anything. Or, you know, if you're not using a television set, just go to, CBS.com and put in a person of interest, and you can watch it there
for free. That's a great thing too.
Going back, you know, to your point about binge watching and
right.
you know, and being able to watch on demand, is that, you know, these seasons, I mean, it's a one long continuous story, right? So I mean, you know, you're being able to like follow it better by being able to watch one episode after another, whereas, you know, sometimes you can kind of get lost in, you know, thinking back about where the last show
right.
end and where did this show begin. So,
yep. Unless you advantage. Ponder it all week.
Yeah.
But then
think about this. Sometimes they take 2 weeks off and they'll replay previous episodes. So you're like, you sit down to watch it and it's one from 2 weeks ago. You know, that's a great thing about the on-demand thing. And a lot of them are free, you know, like CBS.com, South Park Studios. You want to watch any episode of South Park, it's free. The one thing keeping internet from completely destroying television is the lack of a central repository for everything. Because right now you have several major players that have chunks of the market. So like Netflix has ease of use, it's a simple site, easy to search, all of that kind of stuff. But they don't have a lot of great movies. 90% of their catalog, I'm sorry to say, is garbage. It's crap that nobody would watch in their right mind anyway.
In your opinion.
It's crap. I'm talking
somebody
crap.
Likes it.
No. I will bet you if you got Netflix's results, you know, the same things would be watched by everybody, and 90% of it has never even been watched once, or has maybe been watched by some random, you know, neckbeard in Michigan. So the point being is that, so Netflix has a certain chunk, and then you've got Hulu, which has another little chunk. And then you've got all the little independent ones like South Park Studios and you know, these people that have their own stuff. So,
and the actual stations.
Right, and then the actual stations. Yeah. That's why, you know, a lot of the people that seem to be the happiest that I know are the ones that steal that torrent. Because then they can get anything they want all from one location. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like this is exactly what the music industry went through the last 20 years.
Oh,
with Napster. And yep. Because I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to drive to Sam Goody and buy a CD for $16.99 to get one good song.
Yeah.
Jobs saw this coming, made iTunes, made it.
Smart.
You know, see what happened?
Yeah.
And that's but that would not have happened if it hadn't been for the people stealing it first. If it hadn't been for the Napsters and the Kazaas and the file sharing, where the music industry was forced. You know, and we've talked about this before. You know, Kodak developed the digital camera in the 1970s, and they sat on it because they didn't want to cut into their celluloid film profits.
It's fascinating to look at that, and it gives a vision of what's ahead. Yeah. Cyrus, what are your favorite TV shows?
My favorite TV shows are sports. You know? So I love watching sports, you know, and I watch it on TV.
Can you watch it online?
You can. Like Charter, I think. If you have like a Charter package, they'll give you like ESPN3.
Yeah.
You know, you can stream sporting events on ESPN.
ESPN 8, the Ocho.
Yeah.
Obscure sports quarter.
Yeah, ESPN 360, you know, but I think it's, you know, just like Hulu or something else. You get, you know, if you pay an extra fee, then you can watch a lot more shows. You know, we were talking about, you know, the internet, the music industry. One bad effect, I think, to all this is that the money isn't there anymore. The music industry, these musicians, they don't make any money now off of record sales. You know, it's all about touring.
Industry.
Yeah, same thing with the movie industry. You know, the Game of Thrones story Charlie was talking about, a lot of pirated downloads.
Yep.
And you have like this mass dissemination. I think you did one of your And Now You Knows, and you talked about the top rated TV show is MASH.
Right.
And it had, you know,
32 million views or
whatever. Just incredible numbers. And then you got this huge drop off because, you know, the audience is so diversified
And there's so many offerings.
Right.
And it's not so, like it so was when you only had three so real channels. Yeah. Well, and you can really focus your attention. And I keep coming back to it. Reddit is another one of those things is where you can pick – you have a couple of things that you're really into. You can surround yourself with those couple of things. There are subreddit groups. If you're into Borderlands or Grand Theft Auto, you could literally spend all your day looking at talking about Grand Theft Auto. Oh, it's the same thing with TV shows, you know, or with movies. If you have a particular genre, you can really – get specific. You don't have to.
Jerry, is Reddit a public company?
Yes, but they. Well, no, they haven't made any money yet.
That's not an answer. When I say is it a public company, a lot of public companies don't make money.
Okay, they're owned by Condé Nast. That's all I know.
I mean, a public company means that they sell stock and they're available, and you can buy into them. I do not believe so yet.
The
New York Stock Exchange. Like we're a privately held company,
right?
You can't buy stock.
Can't buy stock.
Right. But like you know, Facebook's a publicly held company. Google's a public, you know, is a publicly held.
Then they
company.
Are not. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're a private company.
Right. Then that even furthers my you know, speculation that they're going to get bought up.
They will go back to the Yahoo buying Tumblr.
Well, I'm just curious, like in terms of like what you're pointing out, Cyrus, for the music industry. I'm curious, how are musicians going to be able to support themselves and actually make money?
Tours,
live shows.
Is that really enough?
Yeah, revenue? The big bands, you know, like Motley Crue, we're talking about going on tour. They can still sell out an arena. You know, this $50-$60 a ticket. You know, you got like 40-50,000 people.
What if you're not a big name though? What if you're like a successful artist, but not at that caliber? Would it still
problems.
Be?
I mean, yeah, you still got a tour. Like Jive Cooley. I mean, these guys. They have jobs, you know, and then they go tour when they can.
You know, the way that you make money in the music industry these days, Napster was the start of the whole thing.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Right, but if you're a band and you want to make money, there is a few ways where you're going to make money, and one is exposure, right? And you need exposure. So there's other avenues, and I've said this I don't know how many times on this show, and apparently nobody listens to me but me, and of course Carson when we're talking late at night.
Right.
But is that everyone's doing the same thing, man. They're just doing it in a different way, and people are still trying to like put out CDs. And music and stuff like that. No, people are going to go to the record store, and buy it, and they're not going to, That's why, like our business, for example, we still sell CDs because there's a demand for them, right?
Right.
But we make CDs for, for Amazon, for Random House, for Simon & Schuster. We make them for all the other people who are like, we don't want the cost involved to do it, but we have the infrastructure to do it, so we do
right.
that. But we're like Facebook is right now. Like Facebook is so successful right now with their stock and everything because now they make 45% of their income comes over mobile app.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And a year ago, before they even went public, they didn't even have a mobile app service.
No.
So what I'm saying is that everyone, is going to still make their money the same way. And, in my humble opinion, you're going to make your money like this. One, you're going to put out a product that's so good everybody wants it.
Yep.
Two, you have other avenues that you have to travel now. YouTube, is one.
Yeah.
How do you make money off of that, though?
YouTube will pay you.
Oh. How does that work?
Eyeballs, ad revenue. If you get views, if you create a product that people will watch, you can get paid for it. Because if X number of people are visiting it, they will sell advertising space on where your product is.
Do you know what the number is of how many?
No clue.
Yeah, you can make a lot of money. And as a matter of fact, YouTube will give you $100,000 and the equipment to do it yourself if you have a good enough idea.
Yeah, there's a rising tide of YouTube celebrities. I've seen them appearing on other shows. It's like, I've never heard of this girl. Well, 4 million people a week tune in to watch her video. Those kind of things where they are.
Well, it's just about YouTube. We're kind of getting off the point here, but the thing with YouTube is like this. Okay, we've all been on YouTube and watched, videos, lots of videos, right? If you click on YouTube, right, and the video comes on, and it just, you know, goes straight to the video, right? Mm-hmm. Then that means, you know, it's whatever.
Which almost never happens anymore.
They don't care, right? But if you click on there, right, and it says you can skip this ad in 2 seconds, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
That means nothing. But if you're big,
you have a forced 13, oh, you have to wait 15 seconds.
No, you have to wait the whole 30. You have to watch the whole commercial.
Yeah, right? Sometimes they're 15 seconds, yeah. Sometimes they're 30.
That's true. I've never thought about that because I've been curious. Like, it seems.
If you want to watch
Paul McCartney's video on Queenie Eye, right? You have to watch the whole commercial before you can watch the uh-huh. video. If you want to watch Motley Crue's new video, you have to watch the whole commercial.
Saints of Los Angeles.
The yep. interesting thing is that sometimes there are multiple videos for the same song or whatever, and it's like some are legit and some are just
yeah,
people
some are
posting.
Like pirated or just yeah. the person's face in the background
right.
with the music right. playing.
And so, you know, not all of them.
And
have
the
to
people
wait.
That are running YouTube, right? You know, they know who's gonna wait and who's not.
Right.
If you like, here's a band, the Pretty Reckless. We, you know, they are a really good band. They're young and stuff like that, right? If you want to watch a Pretty Reckless video, you're gonna have to watch, you know, the whole 30-second commercial before you see the video, because people know at YouTube, right? That okay, I'll turn my head for 30 seconds or whatever, right? Because I want to hear the song, you know. If it's something that's mildly interesting to somebody, you know, they'll let you click off in 5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. We've been getting a lot of music. We talked to Matthew Shell, music producer in Washington D.C. You know, he's got a new song out, "My Baby," and you know, he's trying to get there. You know, he's got his song on YouTube, SoundCloud, Reverb. You know, and they do Washington, D.C., so, you know, we're in a really small market. You know,
right.
It's something that's hard for us to remember. So, you know, it's hard for a band like Jive Cooley to make money off of, you know, playing on KSKQ or something. But in a larger market, you know, like Washington, D.C., you might be able to sell enough records regionally, you know, to put together a nice, you know, a little career out of that.
Right.
And, you know, Matthew Shell was somebody we talked to. We can talk to him again. And another guy you were going to talk to, Charlie, is with the Punk Aristocrats, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and how they make their, you know, their mark, right? You know, is, you know, one, you write, you know, a good song or something that people want to hear, right?
Build a better mousetrap, yeah.
You know, I mean, or something that's a novelty that people want to see, you know, like in the first thing that comes, you know, that's like, you know, here's my number, call me maybe, right? That thing must have been watched, you know, or you know, at least...
Millions.
I mean, you know, at least, you know, 30, 40 million times, you know. And we all remember Cyrus's famous dance, you know, when he was... what was the name of that song you were doing?
Are you talking about my twin sister, Miley Cyrus, twerking?
No. Oh, no, Gangnam Style.
Oh, Gangnam Style,
You did something that people were like, you know, people want to watch. But we're a band, you know, makes their money, it's touring, right? And what they do is they sell their CDs, you know, at the venue.
Yeah.
They sell the T-shirts, and they, you know, that's, they make the money on the merchandise, you know, mm-hmm. and people go on to see the show. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like the old adage from Shakespeare, right? You know, I can fill the arena up for you. The first night, you know, I could bring 10,000 people there by advertising, you know, and getting a buzz going, right? But you got to bring them back.
Yeah.
Mm. You know?
Very true. On a completely different vein, I heard some really bad news. You know, Mickey Rooney passed away just recently, 93, I think he was.
Right.
And another very, very famous person passed away recently. Cyrus, would you tell us about that tragic news?
Well, you're right, Jerry. A lot of people are going to be sad about the passing away of Archie. He is a standard, you know, when you go to the grocery outlet, you know, or grocery store, right there in a checkout line, a lot of times you'll see an Archie comic.
I remember reading those comics when I was young. Benny and Veronica.
Yeah, Benny and Veronica.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jughead.
Yeah.
Remember Jughead? Yeah.
Very popular, iconic comic book characters. And it looks like they're going to write Archie out of it. So,
did he ever age, or are they just, is it some accidental death, or is it just he's going to gracefully bow out? Or
looks like he got shot based on the picture I saw.
Yeah, well, he does. He dies. you know, they're all the same age, and then he dies. I guess
like with showing another, the characters reacting to his death.
Yeah, they're gonna go on and like how they're coping with Archie's passing.
Well, I just don't know if I can handle losing Mickey Rooney and Archie all in the same year. I mean, that's just tough.
It is. I mean, what are you going to do, Jerry? I mean,
I might have to go into mourning. I might. I just might. You'll see me in all black for the next year. I'll start listening to punk music and goth and start painting my nails black.
You'd look good with that.
Maybe.
Yeah, Mickey Rooney was he was 93 years old, lived a long life, a good guy. Made a lot of, you know, really cool movies, you know, over the course of his career. You know, lots that we don't remember because we weren't around.
Yeah.
Not even me, you know.
He acted for 9 decades, essentially, because he got his start.
I'm going to tell you the last movie that he did that I saw him in, right?
Right.
It was Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller.
And Dick Van Dyke.
And Dick Van Dyke. And Mickey Rooney. He played one of the guards.
Yep. Well, Night at Museum was a great movie. I mean, I really like museums. And Maya, you had something about a museum recently?
Yeah, well, Matisse. He is actually, there's an opportunity to see all 4 of his blue nudes together in one room, which hasn't happened since he made them in France, like in the early 50s.
Wow.
And yeah, the show opening just happened at London's Tate Modern, and then it's going to be happening at the Museum of Modern Art in New York.
In New York? Oh, right on.
Yeah, and so people are excited to see them all together. You know, normally you think of paper cutouts as something kids would do in school, right?
Like a collage.
Yeah, collage or something. But then you also know that Matisse had those amazing paper cutout pieces, the blue nudes. And it's actually a lot more sophisticated than you'd think. Like, when kids try to do it, you just can't match it. You can't match what Matisse is able to do.
So now, why were they not together in the first place? Were they sold off to different people? Were any of them stolen? Do you know? Or is it just the first time the collection has come together?
They were just located in various places, and so now for this showing, they have been brought together.
Well, cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature. Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more. Living in Puerto Rico, Susan Nandathar talks about her debut novel, City of Sorrows, in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we're very pleased to have on author Susan Nandathar, and she's going to on here to tell us all about her books. And we're really, really, you know, so pleased to have you on. You know, we've been a while trying to get you on here. And welcome so much, Susan.
Thank you. Welcome. It's great to be here.
So, you know, for all of our listening audience out there, yeah, you have a very fascinating story. You know, in your book, City of Sorrows, and you have others, Dante's Kiss and Wondrous Woman, but you have a story behind all of this. So why don't you tell us a little bit all about that?
Yes, there's always a story behind the story, and I guess that story was really my life. I think each event in my life has led up to the telling of each of these stories, starting with a childhood being bullied and made to feel different and kind of isolated, to then living out certain experiences because of that and people I've met along the way. So my life has just been one big story that is now kind of retold in fiction.
So where are you now, right now? Where are you in Puerto Rico or are you in the Caribbean?
Yes, right now my current residence, my official residence is Puerto Rico. So I'm speaking to you from Lajas, Puerto Rico, on the west coast of the island.
And how is Puerto Rico?
It is beautiful. It's warm. It's 88 degrees today.
Oh, my gosh. So what brought you to Puerto Rico? And tell us about these gypsies.
Well, kind of a combination story. I'm in Puerto Rico basically because I met a man in Spain who is from India and was mistaken for a gypsy many years ago in Spain, and that kind of bonded our experiences. I fell in love, and he brought me with him to Puerto Rico because of his job. He's a professor at the University of Puerto Rico, and I followed him here.
Wow, you know, that is fantastic. That's a love story all by itself.
Yeah, that's a whole nother story, right.
So tell us about the book, City of Sorrows. What's it about? What can our listeners, you know, expect when they go out and purchase one of your books? What kind of story are they going to find?
Well, City of Sorrows is actually my debut novel, and it's set in Seville, Spain. And it's really a story about what happens when life sort of takes a curveball and throws us things that we're not prepared for. It basically focuses around a young man named Diego Vargas. Diego is a 19-year-old Spanish gypsy, and he has everything a 19-year-old could ever possibly hope for. He's madly in love. He just got married. He's expecting his first child, and as most 19-year-old men will probably think, nothing could possibly go wrong in his life until it does, and his life takes a spiral because of a tragedy that could have been prevented if the Spaniard he reached out to for help had not been a troubled and tormented racist. The story spirals downward as Diego has to deal with the unexpected, the loss of his wife and unborn child, and it follows him through his journey of anger and rage, guilt, until finally he reaches a stage of redemption, kind of aided by a young man from India who happens to bring with him the philosophies of Mohandas Gandhi.
Wow. You know, and I love books like yours. Just when you think you have the everything figured out, you're like, whoa, what's going on here, you know?
Pretty much like life. We think we have it figured out until the unexpected happens, which is, I think, true in all of our lives. And then that's the real story, is how do we deal with the unexpected, especially when it involves a tragedy.
Right. You know, you're always saying, wow, did not see that coming.
Absolutely.
Well, then so we have The City of Sorrows, that's your debut novel. And, you know, then we move on to Dante's Kiss, which looks like a fantastic story.
Right. That's my second. And it changes genres completely. I would call City of Sorrows more of a literary tale. And Dante's Kiss is a young adult novel geared towards young people between the ages of 12 to 18. And it's based, again, on life experiences, on some of the things I've lived through here with some of the young people of the island. And it's just been interesting to hear their stories about how life is different and challenging for them here in the Caribbean, and how so much is the same, but how many things are different for young people here.
You know, that would be a fascinating read. I have a couple of young daughters around that age, and they, you know, they love to read. And, you know, I'm going to highly recommend this book to them. So you're living in Puerto Rico. You know, let's talk a little bit about living in the Caribbean. As you know, you came from the United States, correct?
Yes, I am originally from New England, from Connecticut.
Okay, so that's got to be like a wild move.
It really is. And it was completely different from what I had expected to find, because I had lived for a couple of years before this after having left Connecticut, went to Spain. And I thought I was going to find Spain recreated in Puerto Rico, but there's very little left of Spain here except for some of the traditions. It's so much more Caribbean than it is anything else. And it's hard to get used to life here, to the attitudes that, not like me from New England, where we have a very strong work ethic and it's not tomorrow that something will be done, it's today. So I've had to really adjust my thought processes. I've had to learn to be very patient and to just sort of like mellow out a little bit. And it's been a challenge. And like you, I have a young daughter who is now a young adult, but it was very hard to try to raise her here with values that were very different from my own.
What is it like living in Puerto Rico, which is technically part of the United States?
Right. It is a commonwealth of the United States. So by governments, we are united, but by culture, it is very different. And so everything you think you knew about life in the United States really doesn't exist here. And it's wonderful to come here as a tourist, and the beaches are lovely and the weather is great, but it's a challenge to live and work here. And Puerto Rico's been making international news now about how challenging it is. The economy is very difficult right now. Education is difficult. So my husband and I basically had to end up homeschooling our child, because unlike in the States, if you have a teacher absent from school, they find a substitute. But here a teacher could be absent for weeks and you don't have any makeup of that class. So the education has to sort of be into the hands of the parents at some point.
Oh, I see. All we see in Puerto Rico is, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, is what we see in the movies and on TV, you know, the Rum Diaries and you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. And we're like, oh my gosh, I've got to get there. You know?
Yeah, the Rum Diaries would be a great life if you could live that, and people do. It was fun to have Johnny Depp here filming that. Yeah, the reality is that it's the life of tourists, and the average Puerto Rican is just struggling to sort of make ends meet and goes to the beach maybe once a blue moon, because, you know, life is just very busy. And so it's not really what the movies are all about.
Now I'm looking at another one of your books, The Wondrous Woman.
Yes.
You know, Spanish for childbirth and women's health. And you narrate this book, right, on an audio version of it?
Well, yes, that's true. There is an audio portion to this. It's a Spanish-English guide for women who are mostly childbirth educators or obstetric nurses that are helping women in labor. So it's a guide to help them be able to speak the appropriate Spanish to get these women through the process with dignity and in their own language. And that's one thing I find here, even though I can speak Spanish fluently, I think that when we are ill or a little bit weak, we immediately revert back to our first languages.
Right.
It's just comforting for a woman to hear her own language when she's giving birth. And that's been a guide that I hope has helped a number of women to have that positive experience in childbirth.
Well, you know, how do you arrive at a book like that? I mean, is that something that came out of a personal experience where, like, well, somebody needs to write a book about this, or?
That was my first publication, and that was many years ago. I think 2003 was the first edition, and because that was a direct result of my life. I'm a childbirth educator and a registered nurse, and that was the practical me that needed to support my family and didn't allow myself to write fiction for a long time. And that was the book that sort of just provided a living for many years. Because I went and I did a lot of workshops in the States to teach Spanish to childbirth professionals. And it's just a personal passion of mine that women should be treated with dignity in their own language, if possible, during this miraculous experience.
Well, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful idea, and you brought it to fruition. So that's fantastic. So you also have a blog, right?
Yes, I do.
Now, do you update it very often, or?
I try to. As you can see, I'm kind of fragmented. I do a lot of different things, but I'm trying to focus. And one of my focuses, or where I think all of this ties in, is in the aspect of what it means to be the outsider and what it means to feel different from the majority of people around you. You'll find those themes in all of my books, including Dante's Kiss. The story is about a young man who is different from most Puerto Ricans, and he's different for the simple reason that he likes rock music rather than rap or reggaeton, which is the national music of the island. And so he is considered the outsider, and he is bullied because of that. And City of Sorrows, the same thing. The outsiders would obviously be the Spanish gypsy and the Indian immigrant to Spain. That theme just seems to predominate in my life as well as in my work. So most of my blog focuses on that theme.
Well, you know, here's a question for you. Now, you're a registered nurse. You're living in Connecticut, and you're in an entirely different profession than, a literary world. And then next thing you know, you're writing City of Sorrows, you're living in Spain, you meet a professor from the Caribbean, you know, you hang out with these gypsies, and then you move to the Caribbean, you speak Spanish fluently, and now you're writing, you know, young people's novels. Susan,
where are you going?
That is a movie right there.
or as my mother would say, you're just a yo-yo. But I think the real me is the one that's out with the Spanish gypsies, with the young people in here in Puerto Rico. The professional, what I'm supposed to be me, is the one that's successfully had my own business and written this book for women and childbirth. And that was the me that kept saying, you need to be real. You cannot write fiction. You cannot go live with gypsies in Spain. That is not a real life. And yet that has been the best part of my life and the part that makes me feel really most like myself.
You know, it's fascinating, you know, that you would draw that conclusion, because I think a lot of us will go on, you know, with our work and, you know, on our lives as we expect it to be, or like, I work at the widget factory and this is what I do. I make widgets. And then you're like, but I'd always wanted to be a, you know, a cowboy or a pirate or whatever, right?
Exactly.
You know, and then at some point, you know, some people like yourself, some people find themselves in that position and they turn around and they look at their regular life, for lack of a better word, and they say to themselves, you know what? That's not me. I am that pirate.
Exactly. And it is a battle between, like you're just pointing out, between being responsible and saying, I have to raise a family, especially I imagine for men, to then all of a sudden coming up to my husband saying, look, you know, I really want to write because that's what I really want to be doing. And that's who I am. And I need to go to Spain to do that because I can't write about gypsies to, you know, explore some of the stereotypes.
And he's like, oh yeah, Susan, I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah, why don't you go right ahead, Susan, and do that? And it was more complicated than that because
did he answer you back and say, you know, you're right. And, you know, also, I've always wanted to go to Russia to join the circus. And I think, we can, you know, maybe make that happen.
Well, he actually was the one who was always telling me since I first met him, even in Spain, that you should be writing. You're a good writer. And I kept saying, yeah, uh-huh. That's a useless profession. I don't want to do that because I need to make money to pay the mortgage and et cetera, et cetera. So when I finally announced that I was going to do that, this was probably 15 years into our marriage. And he said, well, finally. But he didn't expect that I'm going to live with gypsies part and that the gypsies go in the like worst section of Spain because that's where they live and that's where I have to go. And so that took a little more convincing to say I'm going to leave my family for a bit and go and do that. And like I said, he also knew if he didn't allow me to do that, he was just closing the doors really to a lot of who I really am. So I'm very fortunate to have him by my side.
Well, we're very fortunate that it worked out like that. Where can we find your books? I know that you have a website.
Yes, I have the website, SusanAdathur.com, and they're also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and a couple other places online.
Beautiful. Well, we want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We look forward to, you know, having you on again if you would be give us that honor.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for speaking with me. It's been a pleasure.
To learn more about Susan Nandathar, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Love that site.
Jive Cooley describes their sauce live in the studio with Carson Binch, the program director at KSKQ.
Love that guy.
And the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton. Love that guy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are really privileged to have on Jive Cooley here in the studio with us. They're going to tell us a little bit about what's been going on this last year. They have an acoustic album that they put out, and they are currently working on some rock and roll stuff. Have a new drummer, Colin, who is usually calling in sick, I think that is your name.
Yeah.
And and he's in a great addition. You guys, you know, have been on before, and your music is just fantastic. The whole Valley loves it. And it's not just the Valley, but, you know, you guys have branched out, you know, down through California, Colorado. You've been all around.
We love your music, and we know that you guys are played a lot on KSKQ, where you've been down there before and played live. And I'm going to turn it over right now to Carson Bench, who is the program director for KSKQ. And Carson is going to ask a few questions here.
Well, thanks, Charlie. We have the members of the band, Jive Cooley. We've got Eric.
Yep. Hi, everybody.
Eric, tell them what you play.
I play the guitar and sing vocals.
Vocals and guitars. And Jordan?
Hi, Carson. Yes, I play bass, guitar, and sing backups.
Sing backups. And then?
Colin, I play drum set mainly and other various percussion things.
And we have Proof right there with a little ding.
Exactly.
It arranged that to happen every time. Exactly. Well, I will tell you one thing, that I am very enamored with the name that you chose for your band, Jive Cooley. Tell us a little bit about how that became the name.
Well, you know, Jordan and I started the band in Colorado back in, 2006?
Yeah.
And at that time, I decided, first day of college, I was like, I'm not going to school. Sorry, Dad.
He was enrolled in everything. I remember that first day.
He came to wake me up.
I was like, come on, we're going to school, because I was going to college, too. I was like, yeah, Eric's coming with me. Yeah, I got a buddy to go to college with. And
I was hungover. I was in bed. I was like, you know what?
Flaked on college.
Yeah, didn't. So that kind of, you know, I was a chef at a French restaurant at that point and just cooking a ton. I was just really falling in love with fine dining and really just thought that was a great word, coolie. You know, it just comes off the tongue real nice. And jive is just such a versatile word. It's used in negative connotations, positive connotations. It's an adjective, a noun, a verb. Yeah. It's a lot of things. So, you know, it just kind of came together like that. We were kind of thinking of a few names, and that one just stuck because
why don't we tell people what coulis means in French?
Okay, coulis is a reduction sauce of fruits.
Oh, okay.
Or a vegetable. You can have, you know, like a red pepper coulis or a strawberry coulis. It's kind of an elegant kind of a sauce, a garnish sauce that goes well with a crème anglaise.
Like a thicker sauce.
Exactly. Yeah, it's reduced and it's delicious, quite nice.
All right, so let's say if you could describe your coulis, okay, what are the ingredients that make up the Jive Coulis?
I'd say some awesome, rockin', original songwriting done mostly by Eric, but Jordan has some great songs as well. The sauce would, I think, be based in rock and roll, but have tastes of and blemishes of funk. And soul.
Some blues notes blues. In there.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of hints
yeah.
of blues.
Yeah.
Do you agree with what Colin and Jordan are saying, Eric? You think that was a pretty good description of the sauce?
Yeah, you know, it's also, we played at Two Hawk Winery last night, and I kind of said, too, that it's the band is all about, you know, good music and good food and good drinks, and that's kind of part of it, too. It's just getting together with your friends, you know, and expressing yourself. I think that's part of the sauce, too. Just being comfortable in your own skin and, you know, loving yourself, really. That's it.
You know what I think is really cool, and this is my own personal observation, but, you know, when I first heard your name and everything, you know, of course, you know, I understood the word jive. You know, the coolie I didn't understand because I don't speak French all that well. But what I thought was really cool about it was that, you know, it's open to your own interpretation. You know, it's it means whatever you want it to mean.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, very cool. And then just a little background for all of our listeners out there. When I first heard you guys play, I heard you play at Jackson Well Springs.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and we went down there and we were scouting some bands, you know, who would we like to have on the show? And there was a couple other bands like Lost Maven and a few other people that were playing. And then we started listening to you, and then we stuck around for the whole set, and we said, these guys are good, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah. That was fun. Wellsprings was a good venue. I don't know how much they're doing now, but it sure was fun playing in that teepee thing.
And then you guys came on the show, did a, you know, outstanding performance, and, you know, did, you know, just like, you know, great interview with us, and we really appreciated it.
Us too.
And then, you know, I was at a art walk down here in downtown Ashland. I heard this incredible music, you know, coming out, and I go, you know, hey, I think I know that sound. And I walked in, and you guys were all playing, right? And I walked in, and it was the coolest feeling I ever had because I walked in, and you guys go, it's Charlie Stanton. Oh, my God. Look at him, man. And you're like, hey, come on up here and sing a song with us. And I'm like, no. I don't think so, man. You know, but the whole crowd, everyone was just loving it. And then you told us about you were working on a some new material that was acoustic. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can elaborate a little bit that on the acoustic, you know? Where did that come from? And
you want to field that one?
Yeah. I don't know. We were, Eric and I, this last summer, well, spring, summer, we kind of, we went sans drummer for a little while and explored kind of the acoustic roots of the Coulee. And we're trying to, Eric has just a book that is just inches thick of songs. And so we were kind of just going through there and re-listening to some of these songs and taking a new spin on them. And Eric's always writing new tunes. And so it was cool for us to have that time where we were just traveling out on the bus and just working on our acoustic set. And then what became of that was we were starting to build these blocks. Now we're back on the rock thing. But the album is all about just kind of showing where we were this summer and trying to give people the feel of being on the school bus and traveling around to these different towns and getting veggie oil and maybe getting stranded, you know.
Broke down.
Yeah, but ultimately, you know, making it. Definitely.
And this is the poorest we've ever been in our whole lives throughout that period. We're rubbing pennies together, but, you know, the power of music got us through it, man. Like, we'd go out on the street and busk and, you know, make 20 bucks, go get a beer, a slice of pizza, and coffee in the morning, you know, and veggie oil bus just powering right on through.
So now, Colin, you're the new drummer, and how do you like it, man?
So much. I've been meeting so many of these guys' friends, and I originally came from Iowa and moved here about a year and a half ago, and I met these guys. I saw one of their shows and then jammed with them at an open mic. And then I hosted a jam actually by where I used to live right next to Carson.
We used to be neighbors.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so and I'd host jams there. And I was honored to when they asked me to play with them because they're such great musicians. And I love playing original music. And I don't know whether I like playing music with them more or just hanging out with them. You know, it's kind of a toss-up there. And they're really great to travel with, which is always key, you know.
So let me ask you a question. Do they let you drive the bus?
Yeah, totally. I had another band in Iowa, Hunab, that had we were called Hunab, and we were based out of Iowa City, Iowa. And we had, a pretty big RV, so like 36-foot-long RV. So I did a lot of driving in that, too, and traveled all around the Midwest. And I moved out here because I wanted to learn more about the West Coast music scene, and these guys were, already kind of deep in it. So I was like, this works great. I love it.
You know, Eric and Jordan, you know, you had another drummer before and you know, a three-piece, that's a pretty tight unit. Uh-huh. Social or personal dynamics to deal with. What is the adjustment like bringing in Colin? I mean, of course, obviously you need a drummer, but now you guys are all living together in the same house. What has that adjustment been like?
It's been great, honestly. Colin's the best. I mean, and we've been, how many drummers have we had? We counted the other day because we started with Tyler.
Maybe like six, I think.
Yeah, you're the seventh drummer that we've played. Yeah. And by far, just easygoing, just great. Every other drummer we played with was great people. It was, you know, awesome, but it's just, this is the best fit for me and Jordan.
You mean musically or personality wise?
Everything. Like we're all about the same age. We all kind of have the same vision where we want to go. You know, we all want to tour. We want to be a global touring band, you know.
Mm. Now that you're touring and you're doing these weekend tours in Johns, which I think is a really smart way to do it because being out on the road constantly, you know, you start to exhaust all your resources, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So you got to come back and replenish and you're shooting out in different directions and stuff. What are some of the other bands that are out there that are kind of doing something similar to what you're doing that you admire?
Well, obviously, 100 Watt Mind. We love those guys. They're rocking.
Local band.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We saw Rob this morning at Ruby's, and they're going to Coos Bay today. But, you know, they're kind of the same gig as us and same level about. We're all trying to kind of branch out of Ashland a little more. Mm-hmm. We're doing a two-month tour, approximately six weeks in the summer. We're going to the Midwest, Colorado, Montana. We're going to do a big old loop or a crazy eight or something. We're going to Michigan for a wedding and this and that. So it'll be a lot of fun to do that.
Now, who gets on the phone or the internet now? Who gets all this booked? That's a lot of work.
Right now, it's me, but Colin's taking that torch. We got internet at the house. So
just today.
Oh, really? This is you just arriving right now.
So
do you think this internet thing's going to catch on?
Sooner or later, yeah.
Go on.
It's a cabin up Mount Ashland Road. We're surrounded by pine trees. Our jam room's really good. So I feel like what we need to do, our responsibility is to really rehearse more. That's my where I'm coming from right now. We've all been talking about how we need to like really dig into our rehearsing mm-hmm. so that we can make the music something that when we walk away, we're like, wow, we blew our own minds.
One thing that since I've joined maybe about 6 or 7 months ago full time, the group that they have so much material from playing together for
you're
so
still
many
learning
years.
Their material.
Yeah, so I feel like I'm playing catch up on some of their songs and. So that's what we're mainly doing when we're rehearsing. But I think that the direction of the sound is, I think it's open to change. Like, I mean, I've written a few songs that could okay. potentially work with the group. Yeah. But I want to get to learn more of their songs before I bust those out.
Well, Colin, one of the reasons I asked that is that I happen to know that you have a very nice, expensive vibraphone set. And
thanks, college student loans.
Yeah. And that's certainly... you know, that's a commitment to take that with you on a tour, but it sounds like you have room with the bus and all that.
Yeah.
Only three of you.
Do it.
Are you going to involve Colin's vibraphone in your sound at all at any point?
I think we should. Definitely on some album work here and
definitely
there,
studio.
You know.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I mean, like, what was that piece you played on Christmas? Ballade? Isn't that what you call
it? Yeah.
It's just amazing. Like, we're all winding down. Colin just whips out this piece of classical music, plays it note for note, and everyone's almost crying. I'm like, dude, you're just a genius. You can play any instrument. Keyboard, drums, guitar, mandolin, I mean, anything. I'm just like, give this guy an instrument, he'll make it sound good. Yeah. So that's why it's really nice having him back us up, and he's such a sweet guy, yeah. So it just like makes our sound go from here to like here.
And giving his input, too, on our songs, since he, you know, a lot of them are new to him, and so he's really good at speaking his mind and being like, oh, I think, you know, we need to do this here, or, you know, maybe this goes on for too long, or the ending, we got to do this. So, I mean, it's so good for us, too, to have this extra, like, mind in there to kind of help sculpt.
Yeah.
You know, and that's you. So true, you know, just with music. Well, but that's,
you know. Is it difficult to get critiques after you've put your heart and soul and full imagination?
Sometimes, well, yeah, I mean, it's a delicate thing because I need it, and I need definitely because, like, in my opinion... If we never challenged each other, then we'd all still be in caves and we'd still be bashing sticks together, you know? It's the questioning each other, the challenging each other as friends and as brothers that creates something much bigger. And it is hard sometimes, from coming from a family or a friend or whatever, you can't please everybody, but these guys I want to please big time, you know what I mean? Because, you know, without them, I'd be just doing nothing. I'd be bored out of my mind and... It just wouldn't be any fun. So.
Do you find that when you're writing songs, as I figured out in this talk that we're having, that you're the main lyricist? Mm-hmm. What subject matter are you? Do you find that you gravitate towards the same subject matter, or are you all over the board?
I like to try and keep it all over the board. One thing I try and talk very little about is politics and God. Even though I like think about it a lot, I just don't want to, you know, go out there and be preachy. You know what I mean? I don't want to tell people you got it, blah, 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 you know what I mean? It's usually the subject matter is usually just something that I'm going through, and that's my outlet usually. And I try and like word it in a way that it's not so personal about me, but it can be related to by somebody else.
We got to tell everybody you know the album out here, Jive Cooley. Be sure to pick that up, and we'll make it available on Just Imagine Inc. You know and. Sounds great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your email address is?
Jive_Cooley. That's COULIS at yahoo.com.
We are not Jive Coolis.
Oh. Yeah.
Everyone calls us that.
Okay.
Well, except for the Frenchies.
I'm so glad we got that cleared up.
Thank you. I had
okay.
to put it
well,
in.
So you know what? Thank you guys all once again.
Thank
all
right.
Thank you. Come on.
Way to go.
To learn more about Jive Cooley, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
To learn more about Carson Bench, listen to his show, Latitude 42, which comes on Fridays.
4 to 6.
At 4 to 6, you know, and I think you'll really enjoy the show. You know, he's a program director down at KSKQ. He does a great job, and every once in a while, he's kind enough to come in and help us out with interviews like he did with Bobby Seale and Jive Cooley, and he's a really, really, really nice guy.
Color in your cheeks.
Missing You, a number one New York Times bestseller, a USA Today bestseller. From number one New York Times bestselling author Harlan Coben, a heart-pounding thriller about the ties we have to our past and the lies that bind us together. It's a profile, like all the others, on the online dating site. But as NYPD Detective Kat Donovan focuses on the accompanying picture, she feels her whole world explode as emotions she's ignored for decades come crashing down on her. Staring back at her is her ex-fiancé Jeff, the man who shattered her heart and who hasn't been seen in 18 years. Kat feels a spark, wondering if this might be the moment when past tragedies recede and a new world opens up to her. But when she reaches out to the man in the profile, her reawakened hope quickly darkens into suspicion and then terror as an unspeakable conspiracy comes to light in which monsters prey upon the most vulnerable. As the body count mounts and Kat's hope for a second chance with Jeff grows more and more elusive, she is consumed by an investigation that challenges her feelings about everyone she ever loved, her former fiancé, her mother, and even her father, whose cruel murder so long ago has never been fully explained. With lives on the line, including her own, Kat must venture deeper into the darkness than she has ever before and discover if she has the strength to survive what she finds there.
Kat passed out more than slept. As it did every weekday, her iPod alarm woke her with a favorite random song. This morning's was Bulletproof Weeks by Matt Nathanson at 6 a.m. It had not escaped her attention that she was sleeping in the very bed where she had slept with Jeff all those years ago. The room still had the dark wood paneling. The previous owner had been a violin player at the New York Philharmonic, who'd decided to make the entire 600-square-foot apartment look like the inside of an old boat. It was all dark wood and portholes for windows. She and Jeff had laughed about it, making dumb double entendres about making the boat rock or capsizing or calling for a life raft, whatever. Love makes the cloying somehow poignant. "This place," Jeff would say, "it's so not you." He, of course, had viewed his undergraduate fiancé as brighter and cheerier than her surroundings. But now, 18 years later, anyone stepping into her abode thought the place fit Kat perfectly. In the same way you hear how spouses start looking like each other as the years piled on, she had started becoming this apartment. Kat debated staying in bed and catching a few more Z's, but class would be starting in 15 minutes. Her instructor, Aqua, a diminutive transvestite with a schizophrenic personality disorder, never accepted anything but life-threatening excuses for missing class. Besides, Stacy might be there, and Kat hoped to run this whole Jeff development past her. Kat threw on her yoga pants and tank top, grabbed a water bottle, and started for the door. Her gaze got caught up on the computer sitting on her desk. What's the harm in taking a quick look? The YouAreJustMyType.com homepage was still up, though it had signed her out after 2 hours of inactivity. They splashed an exciting introductory offer to newcomers. Who else would be eligible for an introductory offer? A month of unlimited access, whatever that meant, for just $574. Discreetly billed, to your credit card.
Once again, Coben has brilliantly used a current trend, in this case internet dating, to create a can't-put-it-down thriller, says Publishers Weekly. Harlan Coben is the internationally best-selling author of more than 20 novels, including the number one New York Times bestsellers Stay Close, Livewire, Caught, Long Lost, and Hold Tight, as well as the Myron Bolitar series, and more recently, a series aimed at young adults featuring Myron's nephew, Mickey Bolitar. The winner of the Edgar, Seamus, and Anthony Awards, Coben lives in New Jersey. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
When youth will pass away, what will they say about
Behind Me Now Stay There is a Just Imagine Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call us at 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there. When the end comes, I know it'll be just a dream.